guys, welcome back to The Wall Podcast with me, your host, Stephanie O. Quigley. If this isn't the first podcast episode that you've listened to of mine, I appreciate the return and I appreciate you putting up with this somewhat rookie content that I've been putting out and bearing with me as I try and improve this podcast in all ways. This episode is an interview with Shane Finn. He is an endurance athlete and a motivational speaker from Dingle in County Kerry. Shane sat down with me just 2 days after he finished his American Ultra Quest from the Golden Gate Bridge in California, the whole way to the Brooklyn Bridge here in New York, all in aid of Spina Bifida Ireland. As you can imagine, I was dying to sit down with Shane and just chat to him about his mindset, his motivation, his self-doubt, and advice for younger people who kind of feel a little bit out of place, whether they're in college or in a career that they don't want to do. And Shane shared some great insight into his journey and his experiences on this. And I think he sets a great example for somebody so young. At just 27 years of age. So I hope you enjoy it. I hope you take from it what I did. I was definitely inspired by Shane's story and I hope you feel a little bit more uplifted after listening to it. As always, my Instagram is Stephanie O. Quigley. Feel free to connect with me there. I'll put my email in the description box as well. And I hope you enjoy this episode along with all the Wall Podcast episodes as well.
I am a 26, soon to be 27 year old, proud Kerry man. I'm from a small little town in Dingle, which is less than a way in West Kerry. I think a lot of people will know where Dingle is. We don't have much to do in Dingle, but we have some fantastic scenery. We have some great food and some great people. So we have a dolphin in the harbour too that a lot of people like to go and visit. So growing up in West Kerry, I suppose, is a little bit different to growing up anywhere else. You know, your childhood is very much so influenced by GAA and things like that, and that's the path I was going down. You know, school was good, school was great, stuff like that. I actually dropped out of college the minute I got to college. I tried to become an environmental scientist, realised that I wasn't cut out to be a scientist, so I actually left college pretty quickly after going in, and actually decided to go and study something I was interested in, which was kind of fitness and strength and conditioning and things like that, and that's the career I then pursued.
So you never ended up finishing college?
Oh, I didn't even get past the first semester, no.
Okay.
No, absolutely hated it. I hated every minute of it, actually. Really hated it. So I then, because I didn't choose to study something that I enjoyed, and I've been back to that university now to speak to like the second year students and the third year students, and it's a bit bizarre, really, you know, because I'm going into business classes, telling them about my business when I didn't do business. But it's just, that's the way it goes, I guess, you know, and there's more than one way to skin a cat too, I guess. I suppose fast forward from there, I again was a little bit lost as a young fella. I decided to run a marathon out of nowhere to raise funds for Spina Bifida Ireland. And I suppose that really was the catalyst for change in me and in what I do. And kind of things took off from there. I really started my own business when I was 19. Was 180 grand in debt when I was 20, startup debt. So that was again, I think I learned more in that 2 years than I would have in UL. But
so the startup was the gym.
Yeah, okay. So we built a fully functioning training facility, a 7,000 square foot training facility right in the middle of Dingle Town. Kind of again going slightly against the grain. I think a lot of young people our age would see Dingle as a bit of a party town and not really somewhere you'd be into training and stuff like that, but I think, you know, this things are starting to change in Ireland a little bit. I hope so anyway. And we had a great like 4.5-5 years there. That was really good. So we both actually moved away from the business now. So my business partner Mark is just a teeny tiny bit older than I am, and he's actually my cousin Mary's first cousin too from the other side.
Okay.
So we both had that connection to Mary, and it was a great thing to have, and I actually, right before we recorded this, I was on FaceTime to him earlier on as well. So that was a fantastic 4 years. It flew by. I learned a lot in kind of 5 years, you know, when your back is to the wall and chips are down. You really find out what you need to do and why you should be doing it and what the right thing is to do and what maybe the wrong thing is to do too in certain occasions in business. But yeah, since then, and then, you know, in 2017 I got this really mad idea to run 24 marathons in 24 days all around Ireland. And that was a great crack.
Did you just come up with the idea yourself?
Kind of. I came up with it. It took me about a year and a half to come up with it. So on Christmas of 2015, I'm really reeling back the years now. My cousin Mary, who's from Selbridge in Kildare, came to West Kerry for Christmas. And the reason they came to Kerry for Christmas was because they were renovating their house in Kildare. And the reason that they were renovating their house in Kildare was because Mary's condition had deteriorated slightly. And you know, they had to make modifications to the house. And it was at that point I saw that Mary's condition was a lot more serious than what I originally thought. And I suppose it kind of hit home for me that this is a long-term thing for her, you know, and that she was in pain 24 hours a day. So it was on kind of New Year's Day of 2016, I was like, that's it, 24 marathons in 24 days, because 24 hours a day is so hard for Mary and her family. And because it wasn't a 9-to-5 thing for her. And I suppose that really was a almost like, hit me across the head with a sledgehammer. I was like, wow. I was like, you know, there's more to the world than just me running my business and running and stuff like that. And there's people in a lot worse situations than I am.
So did you think that that was... So what age were you then, 2015?
In 2015, I was 23. Wow,
So do you think that was the time where it kind of mentally clicked with you? You kind of changed a bit mentally from being... I'm not saying that you were like... causing trouble, but as a teenage boy in Ireland, you know, 17, 18, 19, you kind of are not really thinking on that wave. It's a very deep thought.
It
it's
is,
kind
yeah,
of
yeah.
very self-aware. You know,
It is. And I remember actually where I was sitting at the time where I came up with the idea. I was sitting on my kitchen table at home with my family. I was eating my dinner and just like, guys, I have an idea. And I didn't really put too much, I just said it, and my whole family were like, yeah, go for it. It sounds amazing, you know. So, yeah, it was hard at the time because we were, I suppose, you know, we were still trying to build the business. We had great ideas of what we wanted to do with it. You know, and then I had to train for this thing and I had to plan it out and step away. When you're in a startup, step away from your own baby for a month is a really, really hard thing to do. So logistically, it was difficult to pull it off. But I suppose I did skip a few years in the old maturity level, you know, from dropping out of college, not knowing really what I wanted to do, to becoming this deep thinker that wanted to actually make a change for people who couldn't really help themselves, you know. So I remember my my grandfather told me before, and he told me this, that you can judge a man's character by what he does to help people who can't help him back. And I never forget that. So out of all the things he told me, that made no sense. That did, and that stuck. So that was a kind of a big thing for me, and I'll never forget that. So off we went, and we raised over 140 grand in the 24 marathons. Ran from Donegal to Dingle through 24 counties as well, and it was just a phenomenal experience. And I suppose when that finished. Was at the stage where we knew we were going to have to step away from the business. We were having a long list of issues with landlords and buildings and etc, etc, typical startup stuff. And just the time was right for us to move on, and to move on having won. So we stepped away debt free, and we got done what we needed to do. And we learned a ton over a 6-year period. And the minute that happened, and then we made that decision, other opportunities started to open up for me, because I was so engrossed in the business that I literally, there was nothing else in my life. It was Monday to Sunday. I went through a 9-month period without making a family dinner at home, and I knew that that wasn't right, and I knew that I wanted to kind of change that dynamic a small bit. So, you know, when that kind of happened, you know, when the 24 marathons finished and the business, you know, took it took its burial. I came up with the idea of crossing America, and sure, here I am now, 3 days after finishing it. The reason I came up with it was I was actually in America at the time, when about a month after 24 marathons, I was in Connecticut, and that was probably the biggest, I suppose, eye-opening thing I've ever experienced. I got a phone. I was so proud of myself having raised 142 grand for SPHI, and just to get a phone call and to say that the charity's funding had been cut by 50% for the next year.
Yeah.
We weren't going to be able to run any of our summer camps for the kids. So there's kids from all over Ireland that go to a summer camp called Shine, They have a couple of different locations all over Ireland. So basically it's a week long summer camp for kids, and it's a week's respite for parents. And that's like their biggest thing for SPHI, is their week long summer camp. And they do adult like independent living weeks and stuff like that. And none of these were going to be able to go ahead in the next calendar year. Unless something was done. So they couldn't fight back for themselves. And I was sitting there in Fairfield in Connecticut in a coffee shop, ready to throw my laptop out through the window. And I just went for a walk down to the beach and down to the Atlantic Ocean. I was like, that's it. That's a sign now that I need to go again. And I was like, right, let's cross America. And literally, I just went back to the cafe, the exact same seat. And I opened up my laptop and I was like, Golden Gate Bridge. It's a good landmark. Brooklyn Bridge, good landmark. Coast to coast. Pacific Ocean, Atlantic Ocean. Let's see what we can do.
And you come up with that idea without even like breaking it down. Like, you kind of say, oh, it's a cool idea to do, but like without even actually breaking it down logistically of how you're going to do it.
I then started Google mapping, and I realized that America is a big place. So I knew I couldn't run the whole thing. If I was to run the whole country, it would have taken me over 100 days. So we decided to bike and run it for 36 days, because again, I'm going way back here. Back in 2014, I actually ran from Phoenix Park to Dingle, and that took me 12 days.
Okay.
I ran a marathon every day for 12 days. And then I did 24 and 24, and I was like, right, well, the weirdo that I am, the next number has to be 36, because if it's not, it'll bother me. You know what I mean? So we came up with the idea of just crossing the whole continent in 36 days, going through 12 states. We actually went through 13, but that's another story. And yeah, like I said, here we are. And my cousin Mary got to come over to New York for the finish line. So as I was leaving Ireland a couple months ago, I went to visit her, and she was upset that she couldn't come and stuff like that. And she was saying that she nearly hijacked an airplane to come over, and we actually surprised her with flights that evening.
Yeah.
As I was on my way to the airport. And she was here on Friday when I finished.
Yeah,
and stuff
I met
like
her.
That. So
yeah.
No, it was fantastic. No, it was really good. Great experience. And yeah, like I said, you know, it was one door closed, another door opens. So and like every cloud is a silver lining. I was very upset to have to, you know, we didn't lose our business, but we had to kind of just close that chapter. And but like I said, it was one door closed, another door opens. So we'll take the benefits out of it. And yeah, here I am in a hotel in Manhattan. And yeah, I'm looking forward to going home. Tingle, real proper eggs, proper milk.
I know.
And back to see my dog again.
So tell me, I was saying to my brother, who is mad into cycling, and my family are mad into cycling, but I was saying to my brother that I was going to interview you, and he just wrote back, and I was telling him your story, and he just wrote back to me. He said, ask him about the suffering. So you're on the road for 36 days, and you know, like cycling and running, and to a lot of people it's like it's just something they couldn't comprehend. It's just something they can't comprehend. To cover. And you were saying to me before we started recording, you said take it day by day, and you know, like, you didn't know how you're going to get through it. And I suppose one of the biggest things was injury for you, because then it's all over. So on the days that you, like, what's going through your head, even the fear of, before you even get to the hard part, the fear of even getting to the hard part, or say you're on day 15, you're like, well, what does day 20 look like? How does your head wrap around all those different thoughts?
It's very
Or do you let it?
Yeah,
you know?
I try not to let it. So basically what I do over the last, when I was training for the 24 marathons, I suppose it would have been my first, the 12 marathons, you know, it was, I was very young, and it was my first step into the ultra kind of stuff. 24 marathons, I was a lot more developed as an athlete, developed as a person, etc., etc. But this, like, if you could imagine the Irish schooling system, the 24 marathons was like going into first class, and this was like, this was for me, it was a PhD across America. So if you think about it, you know, obviously there's doubt and there's fear. There's no way I would stand up anywhere or talk into a microphone and say that there wasn't doubt or there wasn't fear. There are. It's kind of how you deal with them. I think is the most important, really, because we all have doubt about things that we're doing, and it might not be crossing America. It might be going for a new job. It might be going talking to somebody. It could be, no matter what it is, we all doubt ourselves doing things. But what I do, I think what I do differently and what I do have is that little tool of my cousin Mary. That's like, she's probably one of my best friends. And I've just seen what she goes through. And like I said it when I finished on Friday, my little speech that I don't remember too much of, you know, I had to fight for 36 days, and she's been fighting for 36 years every day for 365 days. So when you think about it, what I've done crossing America, I think is fantastic, phenomenal. But compared to what my cousin Mary's gone through, it's a very actually a small drop in the ocean.
Yeah.
With regards to kind of the self-doubt stuff, I think it's natural to have self-doubt. When you look back, we're all kind of 2 or 3 years old, we're afraid of nothing.
Mm.
And then as we develop and grow up and we're thrown into the society, we do kind of start doubting ourselves and thinking about things a bit more. But I kind of just go bring it straight back and keep it as simple as I can. And I just take the next footstep to my best ability. I take the next kilometer on my bike to my best ability. I can control what I can control. I don't worry about the weather. I mean, we went through snowstorms, sandstorms, wind, scorching hot temperatures. I couldn't control any of it, you know, so I didn't really get too much worried about the weather.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I came out of it with some very dodgy tan lines. But other than that, I think I was pretty unscathed from the weather. You know, so I just take it, literally take it day by day. And like, you know, you said, like on day 15, am I thinking about day 20? All I'm thinking about on day 15 is finishing and getting my dinner. Like literally that's it. Recovering and getting up and repeating the process again. When you think about it, and I think this might not be relevant to endurance sports, but I think with everything in modern day life, I think if we can just simplify the complexities, I think we make everything so complicated. You look at fitness, for example, nutrition, all this kind of stuff. The things that sell are the things that are the most complicated and they often don't work. So if we can make things as simple as possible, some people can't believe how simple I try to keep my days. I would wake up, I'd have a shower, I'd have about 4 or 5 eggs, I'd have a coffee and I'd go.
Yeah.
There was no meditation, there was no magic supplements, there was nothing. My meditation would be sitting on my bed, having my coffee in the morning, putting my bike gear on. And that was for me, I would mentally get prepared and then off I go, you know, I start ticking off the days. Some days I do up to about 200 kilometers on the bike and I'd play little games. I would use visualization, I'd be thinking about the Brooklyn Bridge. I would do 4 or 50 kilometers. So I have a 50 kilometer loop at home. And if I am riding through the middle of Kansas, I'm actually thinking about where I am on that 50K loop at home.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, there's Cormac's house, or there's Mary's garden, and oh, that's the dog that chases me every day. you know, so it's little things like that. And I just would play these little internal games and break, like running 60 kilometers, I'd break it down into 5Ks.
Yeah.
A little 5K, I live beside Inch Beach, which is one of the most beautiful beaches in the world. And I'd often just run 5K with the dog on the beach just for the crack on a Sunday night or something like that. And I mean, like, you know, you can do that, and then when you've your 5K done, sock, get a bit of water and just do another one.
Yeah.
Just keep tipping them off, you know.
Yeah.
I was some, you know, I suppose dealing with the overwhelm of the whole thing was difficult for me. In the week beforehand, I was freaking out over in California, but I just tried my best to stay calm.
Okay, and what do you mean by freaking out? What does freaking out mean to you?
Freaking out means to me that, like, you know, what if I'm, like, what if all my tires burst in the bike? Or what if I am cycling along in the middle of nowhere and I get hit by a truck? I had 5 quite close calls with vehicles crossing America. So I suppose, like I said, it would be something happening out of my control.
Mm-hmm.
And I would just have to sit down and say, Shane, you can't control that stuff.
You
can control what you can control, and that's it. And then just give it your best shot, you know?
Yeah.
And as well, I think, you know, try not to be too hard on myself. So I am my own biggest critic.
We all are.
So I think the more I would kind of think about things, the more I build them up in my head.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, when you think about it, you're going from A to B over 36 days, day by day, take it down, break each day. Then people are like, how did you do that distance every day? I was like, I just broke the distance down into chunks.
Yeah.
And each chunk was a little win, you know. Mm-hmm. And then if I was suffering in one chunk, I was like, look, this chunk is going to end in 45 minutes.
Yeah.
And you can have another coffee, or you can have some Oreos or something like that. You know, I would kind of just play these little games with myself almost. And even mentally, you know, I would like pick a song, like one of my favorite songs was to train to his Body by Loud Luxury.
I love that one.
Play it on repeat for like 3 hours.
Yeah.
And just keep going. Keep tipping away, you know. So little things like that, I would use to kind of just keep my mind stimulated and just to keep the negative thoughts at bay. And don't get me wrong, I think when I look back at it and give me like a month or two, I'd be like, I'll come up with more thoughts and stuff like that.
But,
I think for the first initial few days, I think simplicity is the key to achieving what you need to achieve.
When I met you on Friday night when you came into New York, well, it wasn't you that told me, but it was Tom that told me that you felt empty.
Yeah.
And I didn't think that was a negative thing, but I just thought it was interesting.
Yeah.
And how do you feel about, like, how do you feel about that? How do you describe that?
I think the emptiness was physical. Okay. It definitely wasn't anything else. It was, I was just like completely drained. Like I had nothing left. Like that was it got to stage, and it's very interesting from a psychological point of view. If the crew gave me a number, if I had to cycle 200 kilometers or if I had to run 53 kilometers, magically when I hit that number, I'm done. I'm empty.
Yeah.
Now, if I had to bike 150 and run 10, the minute that 10K run is done, I'm like, I can't take another step. So it just goes to show that, you know, a lot of our, I suppose, limits are actually external and they're mental.
Yeah.
So I do think that, you know, if the crew said after 150K, like, can you do 20 more? And I would sit and I'd think, and I was like, yeah, I can. Give me my bike shoes, I'll do it again. You know, so it's very, I think we put a lot of those kind of limits on ourselves, you know. So it was, I found that very interesting, especially towards the latter part, where I did start to fatigue, and I was, you know, obviously I was sore every day, I was sleeping wasn't great, and I was just like, I was just so tired. You know, but I could go to the number that the crew gave me, because I would have this number in my head, and I knew when I got to that number that the day would be done. Now it did happen one day where the crew were like, look, Shane, you only have to bike 170 kilometers today. I was like, oh, not too bad. When I got to 170 kilometers, they're like, look, we made a miscalculation. You're going to have to do another 12.
Sorry, it's not funny.
I know it's not funny, but I was just like,
you had shut off at that point mentally.
I was shut off. I was like, so I sat down on the side of the van for a second. I think I had like a can of Coke, and I was like, all right, let's get it done.
Yeah.
You know, so it was just, it's just, I think when you like break it down, make it as simple as you can, keep turning the pedals over, and you'll get to where you want to go.
Yeah.
I think that's a kind of a metaphor for everything in life as well.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because I would have learned a lot from endurance sports and business would have taught me a lot about endurance sports. And just when you think that you can't go any further, you're nearly out. You're nearly out the other side. So I think it's there's a big crossover between the two.
Yeah. I was actually only saying to my mother today on the phone, I said, you know, I have to go through something myself, like it's just something really difficult. And I said, I already did it already, but it's the fact that like I'm on the other, I'm on the far side of it now, that I have to go through it again.
Yeah.
And it's a little bit more complicated this time. And when I was going through it the last time, I never really knew the complications were even happening until I was out. And if you had asked me, would I have been able to do it, I would have probably said, it's probably unlikely. Whereas I was thrown into it, I had to just find my way out of it, and then it worked out. And it's like, it's kind of that mental, like owning it mentally, kind of, or not letting it get ahead of yourself mentally, and being able to kind of just being in it one step at a time, you know?
I think as well, I think one of the other important thing as well is, and it's not whether it's, you know, I think it's for everybody personally, it doesn't, again, I hate talking about it, but you don't have to bike and run across America. It doesn't matter what it is for you, but as long as it's for you, that's the main thing, and you're not doing it for anybody else, you know.
Yeah.
So you see a lot of things online now, like, oh, do it for the people who don't believe in you and all this kind of stuff, or do it for the people who believe in
it's
you.
It's not about that. Yeah.
Not about that. It's I do it for the core and the primary part of it. I do it for the person that I see in the mirror every morning.
Yeah.
Because I know if I can do it for him, which is me, obviously, in case anyone doesn't get who I'm talking about. And, you know, I can then, the more I look after myself, the more I can help other people, basically. And by other people, I mean people with SBHI, and people in SBHI, and people like my cousin Mary, you know what I mean?
So yeah.
I just think that, you know, it's, you're doing it for you personally, and you'll start seeing signs that, you know, this is right, this is correct. And the story I tell all the time is that I'm over and back to America quite a lot. Last July, I was upstate New York for like a month for a race and getting ready for the race. And the night before the race, there was a mass on for athletes. So I went. The place was packed.
Yeah.
Full, and there was one seat left beside me. I don't know why anybody didn't sit beside me. I was probably like the weird little Irish kid or something. I don't know what the story was. But anyways, about 10 minutes into mass, a woman sat down beside me. I had a green wristband on because athletes wore green wristbands. And she asked me where I was from. I said I was Irish. And she had an orange wristband on, which meant she was a volunteer. So she said, I'm going to be at the third aid station on the run course, because we're just doing an Ironman. So she's going to be at the third aid station on the run course. I'll give you a bottle of water tomorrow, whatever. And I was like, oh, thank you so much. And she was like, oh, what do you do? I was like, I just sold my business. And I said, I do a lot of work for charity back home in Ireland. And we were walking out of the church at this time. And she goes to me, she said, this is 15 minutes into our brief chat, because I would chat to anybody about anything. And she said, just out of a matter of interest, what's the charity that you fundraise for? I said, it's just a tiny little charity back home in Ireland. She goes, no, tell me. And I said it was spina bifida. and the woman went as pale as a ghost. Her son had spina bifida.
No way, yeah.
So I was, you know, little things like that. I was there in the middle of an Ironman, like dying the next morning. I was like, there was a reason that that seat was left free for me, and there was a reason I was meant to be here. And it turns out that the woman sat beside me, her son had spina bifida. And I knew that day that was like what I was doing was correct.
Yeah. Right.
It was meant to be.
Do you believe that though? Like, do you believe that if it's meant to be, it'll happen? Or do you believe that you kind of construct things yourself?
I think both. I think it's meant to be, it's meant to be. I mean, you know, I think I made the decision to drop out of college.
Yeah.
At the time, it probably upset me for about a year.
Yeah.
But
upset your mother for me too.
Yeah. my mother probably still upset. But I mean, if I hadn't made that decision to do something that made me happy.
Yeah.
I probably wouldn't be here. You know, I wouldn't have done this. I wouldn't have done all these things for charity. I wouldn't have achieved all these insurance goals. I'd probably be working in a lab somewhere.
Yeah.
Really unhappy. You know what I mean? So, but then on the flip side of it, I think you can also construct things and you can kind of also forge your own path. You know, so I think both of them go hand in hand. You know, and if you can keep pushing yourself out there and putting yourself into new challenges and challenging yourself in different ways, and that doesn't have to be enduring stuff. It could be just going for a new job, taking a new lesson, going to the gym for the first time. You'll the correct things will start to happen. You know,
yeah.
I truly believe that's how things work. You know,
yeah.
And the right things will start falling into place. And if you do good things will come back and happen to you too.
Yeah. So I want to talk a little bit about going back to. Breaking down the journey and breaking down the journey and from a practicality standpoint of things, did you interested in like when did you eat, when did you sleep? Because I was in contact with you while you were out there, and I didn't want to bother you because I was like, he's probably like either he's like on the side of the road or he's dead. Like I didn't understand how he even had time to be on Instagram. Like what way was your day set up? Did you have somebody plan your nutrition before you went? And
always have time for Instagram. So basically it was you know, at the start it was very regimented. We stuck to everything, like very everything was very solid. To be honest, by day 10 it was just kind of going with the flow. Because my body was just like going through hell. So I'd wake up nearly every morning, like 5:30, 6. It would take me about 20 minutes to get out of bed. I was just so tired. I'd just keep drifting in and out. Then usually it's just a big breakfast every morning.
How many hours of sleep were you getting?
Shooting for about 8, 7, 8.
Okay.
Sometimes I just find it hard to fall asleep.
Okay.
Because I was just so fatigued, so tired. If the day had been hot and I was out in the sun for a long time, I'd be like sweating inside in bed and stuff, you know. So, and then some nights it was absolutely Baltic cold. It was freezing up in the mountains and in the Sierra Nevadas and stuff.
Yeah, really cold. But you trained for the different.
Yeah, but again, Ireland, it's just windy.
Yeah,
West Kerry, and it's just wet. There's no like real hard cold in Ireland, so that was the challenge for me. I remember one day specifically descending down a mountain in the Rockies and having to stop at the bottom because I couldn't use the brakes on my bike, and I just had to warm myself back up again in the camper and get going. You know, so there were a lot of challenges like that. I mean, usually then after about 2 o'clock in the day, I'd have a huge lunch. And I mean, like a 6-egg omelet with like an avocado and bacon and broccoli and another coffee. And then dinner usually was like, usually some kind of a fast food on our way to the campsite. So usually it was like a pizza or like a takeaway burger. And then I would have like a steak with like another like 3 or 4 eggs and just a load of potatoes by night.
And were you hungry for all that, or was it just being pumped in?
I could just keep eating. But by the evening, by the morning, my appetite wasn't great. And usually when I'm at home, it's the other way around. During
the morning,
I can't stop eating, and then by the evening time, I'm kind of just not too bad.
Yeah.
So it's interesting, you know, when your body's going through this kind of stuff, you just listen to it, and you literally give it what it needs. There's a difference between giving it what it needs and giving it what it wants. So I had to give it what it needs, and then sometimes I gave it what I wanted. So, you know, I just remember out of nowhere one day, like on day 3 or 4, just like getting this, I was just cycling down the road, and they're like, we're stopping at the shop, do you want anything? I was like, give me 10 minutes. I don't know where. I was like, I'd love a Twix. I don't know why. I just like got this thing into my head for having a Twix.
You can take the man out of Ireland, but you can't take Ireland out of the man.
We stopped at the shop, and anyway. Lads were like, they've no Twixes. I was like, leave it so. But they got a Twix in the next town. And we had a couple of Twixes later. I was like, all right, lads, I'm done with the Twixes now. I just got this thing for double stuff Oreos, so they have the extra.
Oh yeah, because you can't get them in Ireland.
No,
yeah.
I can't get them in Ireland. So, and then had a normal Oreo at the end, and I was like, oh, it's not the same. So they were kind of my go-to treats, really, with a cup of tea by night.
So
I think I need to take a break from the Oreos now for a while. But it was, it was interesting. Like, it was, sometimes I would feel the feeling of hunger, and next thing it was gone.
Yeah.
And then I'd stop to eat, and be like, oh, I'm actually not hungry anymore. But I guess your body's just going through so much, it doesn't know what's going on, really.
Yeah.
You know, so it's just listening to it. And again, like, having my physio there was probably crucial, really. I wouldn't have made it with her. And my nutritionist Barry, who's also probably one of my best friends, we've done a lot of training together, and he's an ultra athlete himself. He's won a lot of races around Europe and stuff. He couldn't come because his missus had a little baba right before I left. So but he's taught me a lot over the last kind of 2 or 3 years too, and just fueling myself. And it was day 20 before I had to take a protein shake, so I wasn't getting enough protein in through food. So little things like that. I don't do supplements. I think the closest thing to a supplement I would take would be, there's a business at home in Kerry that I'm doing some work with. They're called Origin Protein Bars.
Yeah.
So they designed a special protein bar for me with extra calories and extra protein and stuff in it. And that's the closest thing really I take to a supplement,
yeah.
I would say. So I just try to keep it as clean, as natural as I can.
Yeah. And then, so when you go back now, say we're still here in New York, but when you go back to normal-ish life, you kind of go home now and all the buzz is kind of dying down a little bit. What kind of training will you get back into?
Yeah, I'm actually going to go for a run tomorrow. I think I need to just to keep my body moving, because if I just completely stop, it'll take my injuries a bit longer to recover.
Okay.
So the hotel here actually has a gym, so I might do an early session here in the morning. People can say, oh, you're addicted or whatever. It's a big part of my life. I don't feel the same unless I train or unless I exercise or something.
Yeah.
In the build up to this, there was a lot of PR, and I was up and down the country quite a lot, and I would plan my rest days around my travel days. So if I had to travel to Dublin for a day, I would take that as my rest day or whatever, So when I go back home, I'll start swimming again. So we do a lot of open water swimming around the harbour and stuff there in Dingle. Like, it's beautiful, I'll probably do a good bit of cycling again, and then I'm back in New York in November for the New York Marathon, so I'll have to start running again sometime soon. So I'll just take it easy. I'm actually going to try and enjoy my training now as well for the summer. I might do a local race, a couple of 10Ks or something at home or something like that. Just not put too much pressure on myself, because I kind of went from performing fairly well at Ironman Lake Placid last year in upstate New York, to literally coming home and within 24 hours, I was in full American Ultra training mode, like every day. I remember having a glass of wine with my Christmas dinner last year and feeling terrible about it, that I had it, So
why?
Just, I suppose it was because when I win these things, I go completely off alcohol, absolutely zero tolerance. So when I finished on Friday night, I had 5 pints of Guinness, and that was the first time I drank in a long time.
Pretty drunk,
No, I was actually okay, because I was eating all that for all night as well.
Yeah.
And we were leaving that time as well, but if you left me there now, I would have probably put away another few. But I'd actually rather get up on a Sunday morning and train at home with 3 or 4 of my friends.
Yeah.
Rather than go out on Saturday night and be wrecked all day Sunday,
So that really leads me on to the next question. Well, I haven't drank in 7 years.
Yeah.
So for me, there was kind of so I'm 27, so since I was about 20, give or take, I probably waited a year and then had a glass of champagne at some point, but I haven't been drunk in 20 years.
Yeah.
And I gave it up just for when I lost all the weight, and it was easy for me to give it up, because I'd rather have a burger and chips and then have go out and drink,
Of course.
And I wanted to train the next day, and I wanted to be I wanted to work or whatever. Yep. How do you, as someone of the similar age to me, how do you feel about social life, doing all of this, and the American Ultra isn't your first kind of thing that, in a way that it's unsociable, because you're away from all your friends, but there's also training back, at the end of it, at the start of it, it's not just the day that you're on the road, you come back and everything's grand, slide back in, but you've always seemed to be like that, starting a business the way you did and having that take over your life at such a young age.
Yeah.
What does that mean to you, socially, growing up, or do you even think about that?
I would think about it. I mean, I actually gave up alcohol from 20 to 24.
Yeah.
Was in a training full-time business, long-term relationship, and I was actually getting introduced as a guy who doesn't drink. So I was like, yeah, I didn't really care. No, that's me. didn't really bother me, to be honest. But what I did do, what I did notice is that once I got mad into the business stuff and the endurance stuff, you kind of realize that, you know, sometimes if you're just going out drinking every Saturday night, that all you have in common with those people is going out every Saturday night.
Yeah.
And I don't mean that to offend anybody, but it's just the reality of what I saw. And I've noticed now that, you know, I can say that, oh, you're just so into your training and your work. But my friends are involved with my training and my work too, you know what I mean? So I train with my friends, I work with my friends. And I actually prefer that, you know, to going out and not being able to remember what I actually said to my friends on Saturday night.
Yeah.
And look, it's not for everyone. I have lost friends. I've lost contact with friends I went to school with. And that's just the way it goes. The world moves on, you know what I mean? But it is what it is. And I think I can still enjoy myself socially without having to, I can drink or I don't have to drink. You know, Friday night, it's a lot of fun. I just had a couple of drinks.
Yeah.
Probably won't drink now again until I go home, or, you know, I might have a night out with a couple of my mates back at home. A few lads want to take me out for a night out when I go home, and that would probably be it for me for the summer, really, to be honest, because I just prefer to get up in the morning and be able to go out and go for a run or go for a swim or something like that. And, you know, I know, I suppose it is going against the grain a small bit, and I suppose it's very not Irish. But look, I think it's changing. I think it is changing a little bit more. I think it's changing at home a little bit. But it's definitely when you start traveling and you start meeting new people, and when you start seeing more of the world,
you see that that's not what's out there.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly.
So, growing up as like somebody who has gone against the grain at such a young age, in my own way, I feel like I kind of have always been the black sheep of like my friends and stuff. Luckily, I have like good relationships, but I think the culture in Ireland and in society is that like we do all those things, like we go out and we drink, and then we get married and we have kids and we stay in the same town, and it's like nobody leaves, and there is nothing wrong with that. Everyone has their own version of happiness, and there's nothing wrong with that. But for people who like either leave and move to New York City and think that they're like, you know, they start this new life, or somebody like yourself who started a business at such a young age, do you get any backlash off people? Like,
you mentioned
all people saying that you're addicted.
Yeah, I think my view on this is that I could be stand to be corrected here, and this may not be everybody's cup of tea, and this might be a bit of an eyebrow raiser, but I think when you start pushing yourself and start trying to become better, whether that be moving to New York City to pursue a job you want, or it could be doing crossing America, if you stand up and push yourself, it makes other people uncomfortable because they have realized that they have settled with where they are, and they know that they're not pushing to their full capacity. And I think unless you're honest with yourself, and I know that, you know, I got to the Brooklyn Bridge, great, but I said I was empty, but there was still a little bit in the tank. Do you know what I mean? And I know that, you know, in maybe 10 or 15 years time, I might do something like that again. But I know that I'm constantly challenging myself, and that makes me feel good.
Mm-hmm.
And I know if you just do your own thing, it makes other people uncomfortable. I think that's where the backlash would come from. And maybe maybe it's a bit Irish again, a bit of resentfulness because you're doing what you want to do. And, you know, I have a story of like one of my best friends I was in school with all the way up, when I tried to go to college, we tried to live together. You know, and he did his degree and he did very well, and like he got top class honours and he got a job the minute he got out of college, and I was around Dingle, hadn't a clue what I was doing, and like we met up and he was like, I'm miserable. I just wish I was doing what you were doing, and I had no idea what I was doing.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So that was little things like that, and I think if you can just identify what makes you happy,
mm-hmm.
just go for it.
Because
life's too short. At the end of the day, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think, like I said, I always have that card. Like it's, I mean, you know, I crossed the whole continent of America 3 time zones just to see the smile on my cousin Mary's face on Friday. Like it was worth it. I would like, if I could see that again back in the Golden Gate Bridge, I'd probably pump up the tires of my bike and go again, you know.
Yeah.
So it was such a big thing for her, and that's kind of why
yeah,
might not be everybody's cup of tea, but that doesn't really bother me much anymore.
Yeah, that's good. And so what do you feel like, I know we've already talked about this off the record, but like what do you feel like you want to, like 15 years, 10 years, 15 years, what does it look like for you?
So I think I have, you know, like I said, when one door closes, another door opens. So since we kind of stepped away from the business, I mean, I've actually, one of the businesses that we were in, Ireland's Best Entrepreneur with, but they were in a different category. You know, I've actually kind of started working with them nearly straight away, like in a kind of a consulting role and stuff like that. And like they're booming back home in Ireland. Like they make, like I said, really healthy, clean protein bars. They're looking at like opening up routes into the US, and they're like, you know, with your contacts in the US, would you come and be our man on the ground there? And little things like that. I've other opportunities that are popping up too. And I think, you know, I will probably end up coming to America for a while. Where in America, I have no idea. As of now, I'm definitely going back to Boulder for a little while. I'm never again going back to Nevada. But I think in 10 or 15 years' time, I'll probably be back in Ireland. As much as I love traveling and stuff like that, I just love home. You know what I mean? And I will move away and stuff like that, but I love West Kerry. I love Dingle, and it's a very, very special place to me. And I suppose it's I spent many days there training in the wind and the rain and the sun. And I suppose it's maybe a thing at home, but you're just proud of where you come from, you know, and you never forget it, you know. So I think that might be an Irish thing as well. I don't think anybody else from kind of around the world, I think the pride of home is it's a big Irish thing, you know. So I think I'll definitely end up back at home.
Mm-hmm.
But what'll happen between now and then, I have absolutely no idea.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's okay too. Yeah, you want to still keep teaching and...
Yeah, I think I do some part-time teaching with a university in Connecticut who sends students to Dingle. So that'll keep me moving over and back anyway. You know, so that's, I mean, when I arrive home on Thursday, I start with them on Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
So there's like 50 of them coming on Saturday morning. So it'll be straight back into it again when I'm home. And, you know, we kind of started a small bit of a business with a guy here in New York where we bring people from New York on a running holiday to Dingle. So that's kind of cool, and that's like our first pilot program. So we've like 12 folks coming to Dingle for like a weekend, running vacation, as they say here in America, as a holiday, as we say back at home. So that's, you know, that's gonna take shape over the next year or two as well, and that'll keep me going back. So
yeah,
I'm always trying to keep some way, little keep my claw into Dingle some way, you know.
Yeah.
No, it'll be good, and actually I'm so proud of the place as well. I mean, I can't wait for those 12 people to come and just to show them around where I'm from and show them like all the pictures I put up online, like this is where I train and this is where I go, and like we're taking them to the Blaskets, and we're going to go where they shot the Star Wars movie, we're going to run there, and
we're
going to take them to the distillery and my local coffee shop, and you know, all that kind of stuff. So it'll be more of a tourist-based running holiday, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Not really focused on hard training and stuff. It'll be more kind of educational based, but also kind of experience based as well. So we kind of have that hopping along, and so I think I'll be definitely packing up some air miles with Norwegian or Aer Lingus or United or something like that over the next few years.
You're not settling down anytime soon.
Definitely not. No. No.
Yeah, that's good. Okay, so last question. What advice would you have for somebody like yourself, maybe when you were 21, 22, who is kind of feeling that college isn't, like, the idea of that college isn't for everybody is, you know, people don't talk about that, and they don't accept that in Ireland anyway, for sure, and they think that there's no other, like, route to go.
Yeah.
What kind of advice would you have for somebody like that?
The number one thing I'd recommend for people, and again, it's so cliched and it's always said, but literally, like, just do what makes you happy.
Yeah.
And it sounds so simple. I go to college. Before I came to America, the Thursday, but I flew to America on a Friday, on the Wednesday before I came, I was speaking at NUIG, and every time I go to speak in a university in Ireland, I see 50 to 60 younger versions of me sitting in front of myself. You know, might be just in the college, maybe they're in their second year of college, completely lost, no idea what they want to do, no idea where they're going. And that's I just wish young people would accept that as being okay. And it's okay not to know what you want to do. It's okay not to feel like you want to do something.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you don't have to follow to university just because your friends are going. You could go to something else. You could take a year out. You could learn more by taking a year out and working than you would do wasting a year and then dropping out.
Yeah.
You know, so I think it just make it your decision. I think that's really important. A lot of us can be influenced by career guidance teachers and parents and stuff like that. But unless you're at the end of the day, unless you're doing what you want to do, I don't think you'll actually be fully like satisfied and happy.
Yeah.
And that might take time to figure out. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It'll take a bit of a while to figure out. You won't just wake up some morning, before you're leaving CERT and decide this is what I want to do, I'm doing it, this is it, this is my life.
Yeah.
There's a lot of pressure on young people at home in Ireland to have their whole life figured out. My little brother's in fifth year and he's already freaking out about his leaving CERT.
Yeah, I know. It's tough. Crazy. And I remember the stuff, I'm doing exactly what I dreamt of doing when I was like 13. Everything is exactly what I thought it would be. But I don't know how I didn't get swamped into like, they told me I was going to be a nurse, and I was like, oh, I'm going to be a nurse, that's it, like, or a teacher.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, I in my head, I was like, I don't want to be a nurse or a teacher, and I want to do what I'm doing now, but I didn't know the steps to get there, and they just,
when I was in secondary school, I've been in fourth year.
Yeah.
And because I was quite young in my class, I had to do fourth year, I couldn't jump ahead. So any day that the weather was nice, I wouldn't go to school. Because I just love being outside.
Yeah.
I just work with my dad for a day. And I remember going to a career guidance teacher in fifth year, and she, you know, I said, look, I just want to be outside. Like, I'd never sit in an office in my whole life, ever.
Yeah.
And she's like, oh, you should do environmental science. Oh, you're going to be outside. So I signed up, got it through the CEO at college, and I was in labs just all day, every day, with like third year science educational teachers. And I was just like, I haven't been outside since I came to this college, you know. So I was like, this isn't for me, I'm gone. You know, and then I suppose the running really started to kind of go to the forefront. And I was like, oh, I kind of like this. So I was like, A, it makes me feel good, and B, I can actually help other people. So I was like, oh, let's see where this goes. And then just by starting that running and actually going studying more into that and doing all the strength conditioning stuff, it led me to open up my own business. And then sure, off I went then.
Yeah.
So do what you want to do.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter, and don't be pressured into doing anything. I think that's the main thing.
Yeah.
I mean, the social pressure that young people are under in Ireland now is just frightening. Because I actually remember being in college and not having Facebook or Instagram yet, and it was just completely different. So I don't know how, like, I don't know how they do it.
It is tough.
So people are constantly comparing themselves to other people and putting people up on pedestals and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Just always bring it back to, you know, unless you put the person in the mirror isn't happy, that's you'll never be happy, you know.
Yeah,
so
it's your own truth.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
I appreciate it as well.
Taking the time out 3 days after finishing your amazing trip.
Yep.
No, it's an honor, and I think it's gonna make really good content.
Yeah.